Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 16th of June 2013. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James, Phil from the West End Whingers, Johnny Fox, and Rev Stan. We're now going to talk about Billy Liar. This is a musical based on Keith Waterhouse's 1959 novel and the play that he wrote with Willis Hall afterwards. The book for this musical is written by Dick Clement and Ian Lafrenet. The music is by John Barry and the lyrics are by Don Black. It's almost spoiling you. The original production starred Michael Crawford and Elaine Page. Not sure how big her part was in it. She played Rita. Done in 1974, and I believe it ran for 2 years. Did you actually see the original, and can you tell me more about it, John?
I did indeed. I was 19, and I worked in London for the summer, and so I got to see some rather fantastic stuff, like Angela Lansbury's Gypsy, and a couple of other really good things. But also, I was very impressionable and saw Michael Crawford become a star, if you like, through his performance as Billy in Billy at Drury Lane. Yes, it was the show that catapulted Crawford to stardom, but it's also the show that catapulted a fairly little-known Elaine Page back to her mum's spare room in Barnet until she was discovered 4 years later by Hal Prince for Evita. She played Rita, which is one of the three girlfriends that Billy, the fantasist and Yorkshire layabout and coffin shop assistant, or sorry, funeral director's assistant, has in tow. And the twin themes of the show are that he has a fantasy life. He is president of the Republic of Ambrosia. He is captain of its football team. He is a Hollywood mogul or a movie star and, you know, consorting with Marilyn Monroe and so on. But at the same time, he's a serial liar who tells different tales to the three different girls he's going out with at the same time. They're sort of quiet and rather repressed. Barbara, I think she is. There's the girl who actually does understand him. And then there's this absolute total loudmouth scrubber. But it was very generous, I thought, of Elaine Page to play on her Sunday Radio 2 show last week a clip from the Union's own production featuring Mount View graduate Keith Ramsey, who is playing Billy in the Michael Strassen production at the Union. Hearing it again on the radio confirmed two things for me. One is that although some of the lyrics are very tortured, Don Black really did write an extremely good score for this. And the other is what a wonderful rising talent Keith Ramsey is going to be. I say he's going to be because there's a lot of the reviews just praised him to the skies, which he deserves. But his reading of Billy is, it's more a most promising newcomer than a superb leading man. And although he plays it with a new introspection and a softness that you didn't get from Michael Crawford in the original or from Tom Courtney playing it in the John Schlesinger movie, he has a vulnerability, but also he's a little bit too curious incident to the dog in the night time. There's a little bit of hand clenching and eye rolling. In fact, there's a lot of hand clenching and eye rolling that makes him a little bit too far along the sort of Asperger's autistic spectrum to be also the Lothario who's pulling three birds at the same time. And there's a wonderful Yorkshire word that describes how he is, which is not right for the character, and that's marred, and it M-A-R-D, and it means a bit soft and a bit wet and a bit thick and not really someone that girls certainly gravitate towards. So he has a lovely voice. He has a remarkable talent. I would like to see him do some other things. I think, as you mentioned in your introduction, the script is by Dick Clement and Ian Lafrenet, the writers of The Likely Lads. And really, you know, 40 years later, it has absolutely no dust on it. It's still very fresh. And although we've been through countless Yorkshire iterations of Alan Bennett and so on, it still has originality and some very crisp lines in it. So I think Michael Strassen's challenge in directing this was to shrink, well, a show he'd never seen. Presumably he's too young to have seen it at Drury Lane. A show that was always writ large, because both in the movie and in the Drury Lane stage version, the fantasies are hugely acted out. I can remember Michael Crawford skipping or tapping down an illuminated staircase, which must have cost thousands of pounds even then. And it all has to be done in very, very minimal format in the Union. And it's too minimal for me. I think that although there have been lots of inventive stagings of scaled-down musicals in the Union, this one is a little bit too primitive, and there are things that he could have done with a bit of projection or a little bit more than a few cardboard cutout props. When the ensemble are the population of Ambrosia, they sing what sounds a little bit like the national anthem or a paean of praise to Billy as their president. And the score has beautiful harmonies and has been, I think, quite substantially reworked by musical director Richard Bates. Strassen's staging is up to his usual standard. He does his own choreography, doesn't contract in an outsider, and some of the set piece numbers are really, really good. The ensemble is absolutely flawless. There are no weak links in it. And I think the strongest ones are perhaps a newcomer called Katerina Stearman, who plays the girlfriend Liz, who actually understands Billy. And his best mate, Arthur, is played by a young actor called Adam Colbeck-Dunn. Thought they were both very good indeed. And I would also praise, as a lot of the reviews did, the three older characters, Billy's mum, dad and gran, played by Mark Carroll. Ricky Butt, who plays his mother, is really, really lovely characterisation because she has to both be down-to-earth, very practical northern mam in the scenes in the kitchen and then switch immediately into being, sort of countess type in one of Billy's fantasies. And she also taps up an absolute storm in one of the numbers. And a lovely lady called Paddy Glynn, who plays his redoubtable Nan. Very, very, very nice characterizations, quite strong, quite well fleshed out. So an engaging production, but just for me, a little bit too small for what really is supposed to be the portrayal of a very widescreen fantasist.
So, Gareth, what did you think?
I enjoyed it very much. And I'm kind of, it's a bit of a mystery to me why we've had to wait so long to see it again, really. I mean, I didn't actually see the original production, unlike the others. But, given the pedigree of it, based on the play and, Dick Clement and Ian Lafrenay's book and John Barry's music and Don Black's lyrics, why has it taken almost 40 years to see it again? Because it is actually a very good show. I think it's a very good production at the Union, although I can also see how it would work very well on a bigger stage. But I think, frankly, I'd rather see it there than not see it at all. And in Michael Strassen's usual minimalist style, there's no set as such. It's just, some props and very good lighting. Some very, very fresh choreography, I thought, which he did himself, because there's no choreographer credited in the programme. So all of the staging, including the choreography, was by him. And he's only able to sort of move between the real world and the fantasy world by just kind of flashing a light, really, which is effective. It works. I enjoyed it very much. I don't think the music is great. I think it's good rather than great. The performances are, I think, universally very good. I really do think Keith Ramsey is excellent as Billy. And I think I would very much like to see him again. He's just seemed to be absolutely right for this part. And I'd quite like to see him do something else to see what range he's got. I love the parents and the gran. And there was his friend Arthur. Was somebody else in the cast that really kind of caught my eye in terms of a very good performance, and that was Adam Colbeck-Dunn, who played his friend and colleague Arthur. So I think it's a very good musical that we've been waiting to see. Well, I've been waiting to see a revival of for a very long time. Given another Union production, Michael Strassen's given us half a dozen productions in the last 4 or 5 years that have been really very, very good in this kind of trademark minimalist style, but always with high musical standards and always with very sort of fresh and sprightly staging. So another very, very enjoyable visit to the Union for me.
We're now going to talk about Amen Corner, which is James Baldwin's play written in 1965. It's directed here at the National Theatre, the Olivier, by Rufus Norris, with a set designed by Ian McNeil. It's about a Harlem church in the 60s. We have Sister Margaret, played by Marion Jean-Baptiste, who's the hardline preacher there, and her congregation is beginning to simmer and chafe at her rather uncompromising attitudes, as is her son, who is developing an interest in music like his father, and is becoming a little bit wayward, staying out too long, you know, going round to the sort of things that a preacher would not approve of, and certainly Sister Margaret doesn't approve of him at all. Her problems begin to come to a head when her husband, who has been away for a number of years, returns, and he is ill and he is dying, and she copes with trying to protect her position in the church and also caring for a husband that she realises perhaps that she's, you know, she's conflicted about it. She's not sure whether she loves him or not. She has gone away from him because they lost a child, and she sort of has gone into faith and regards everything about him as the sin that she was trying to escape and the sin that perhaps helped her lose her child. I mean, it's a very impressive production, this. I'm not sure how good the play is. The strongest bits are when we see the politics inside the congregation. We have a very strong performance, I think, by Cecilia Noble as Sister Moore, the pure, virginal, and incredibly Machiavellian. She's kind of the deputy preacher, and she certainly wants to move up to being the main person. Marion Jean-Baptiste, coming back to the National after many years in America, in American television, this is actually the first thing she did since a rather remarkable cast production of The Way of the World, I believe it was, and that was in the mid-90s, and it had an absolutely incredible cast. People like Fiona Shaw, Sian Thomas, and there's also people like Catherine Tate and Geraldine McHugh and Richard McCabe in that production. So it was a rather remarkable one, but Marion Jean-Baptiste shows why she is certainly deserving of this sort of major role here, and she is very effective. As is Sharon D. Clarke as her sister, who apparently she's lost a bit of weight, and she looks fairly chiselled. I did think of the word hewn from Living Rock jumped into my mind for some reason. Both Marion Jean-Baptiste and Sharon D. Clarke playing sisters, they're very effective, but I'm not sure that the domestic scenes really did it for me. It was very much this politics of the congregation and their unhappiness with Sister Margaret's rule that really really affected me and really got me going. It has to be said that part of that was the singing. They've got London Gospel Choir in to provide music in the background, and there's this constant singing within the play, and it's very effective. Those the scenes in the church, as I said, they are, even when they're not sort of plotting and campaigning, when they're just worshipping, it's a particularly well-staged piece and very, very musical. It's a very, very good production, but I'm not absolutely certain about the play. Phil, what did you think about it?
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you on that. I think the production's absolutely sensational. The acting's terrific. Everybody, it's really an ensemble piece. I think Marianne Jean-Baptiste, Sharon D. Clarke were absolutely terrific in their roles. I think that Sharon D. Clarke's really very subtle in what she does. And the standout performance for me in, you know, a lot of good performances is Cecilia Noble. I just couldn't take my eyes off it. And also, what I thought was particularly good about it is her performance is very funny, and I think that the play really needs that, because like you, I found the play, given it's sort of over 2.5 hours, there's not for me enough sort of plotting kind of to sustain the interest, I feel. And also I had a slight problem. I was sitting very near the front. I was in the front row for the first half and then moved back because we had seats separately to the person I went with from the second row, so I was still very close. But because of the two-tier set, the gospel scenes in the church felt a long way away, even from the second or third row. And obviously, you know, we were looking up, which was a bit of a problem, but it still felt as though it was happening too far back. I think given the mechanics of the Olivier, they needed something that could have brought that forward. I mean, the singing is absolutely sensational. And, you know, it is that, you know, that feeling when you hear gospel music, even though I'm not at all religious, it's does, you get a shiver down your spine. But in a way, that seeks to sort of lengthen the whole production into what for me was not an incredibly interesting play, but brilliant production of it.
We're now going to talk about Happy New, which is at the Trafalgar Studios 2. It's played by Brendan Cowell, and it was sold out at the Old Red Lion in 2012, and it's been given a transfer to this Trafalgar Studios. This is actually something that's been done a few times. I think we've got one or two transfers coming in from the Old Red Lion, and we've also had things in from downstairs at the Hampstead coming into the Trafalgar Studios too, which is always quite interesting. This play stars Lisa Dillon, Joel Samuels and William Troughton, is directed by Robert Shaw. Rev Stan, could you tell me more about it?
Yeah, it's an Australian play. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Elling. It's about two brothers who, when they were children, were discovered locked up and abandoned in a chicken coop. And they get rescued and rehabilitated, but they've kind of become curiosities within the Australian TV culture. And Lisa Dillon plays a TV presenter, Prue, who sort of like takes them under her wing and pushes them into the limelight. But it's sort of getting close to the time when they need to sort of start going out into the real world and sort of just having a normal life like everybody else. And it's a black comedy, but it doesn't feel like it has many laughs. I think the problem is there's a lot of... It feels like it's slightly backward, and there's a lot of sort of like you discover a lot of stuff towards the very end of the play, which can work fine. But for this, I think if you'd known a bit more from the start, it might have made the comedy work a little bit better, because you're never quite sure what situation they're in and what's actually going on. I mean, there was one moment when I did really have to stifle a fit of giggles, because in the story, somebody throws a roast chicken at them, which is quite cruel, because obviously when they're under pressure, they start descending back into their life in the coop, and they sort of, you know, they start making chicken noises and sort of moving around a bit like chickens. But that for me was probably like one of the funniest moments, and I had to stifle my fit of giggles, mainly because no one else was laughing. It was just my sick sense of humour. It's very, very well done. There's lots of very long speeches in it, which are sort of almost like poetry. But it is just a little bit too surreal, I think, without a sufficient setup at the beginning. So I'm not sure it quite works. It might work better if I saw it again, I think. Now, knowing what I know now, I think I'd probably get more out of it the second time. It's something, if you want to see something a little bit different, and Lisa Dillon is absolutely superb in it, yeah, it's worth a look.
We're now going to talk about Rutherford and Sons, which is a Northern Broadsides production that's been touring around the country and has just opened, or recently opened, at the St. James Theatre. This is a play by Geeta Sowerby, who we talked about earlier this year when the Orange Tree Theatre did her play The Stepmother. And this is a much better known play of hers. Ran for quite a long time when it was first done in 1912, 133 performances, and apparently got a very good review by the reviewer, who then found out that it was written by a woman and gave it a very bad review. Tell us more about it, Gareth.
Well, I'd seen the play before. I saw it at the National Theatre almost 20 years ago, and I mean, I thought it was excellent then, and I thought it was a real discovery. And the National Theatre did actually put it in their top 100 plays of the 20th century when they had that special, I can't remember which particular anniversary it was for, or perhaps it was just the turn of the century. So I have an affection for the play anyway, so I really wanted to see it again. Northern Broadside, a great company for me. I try and catch a lot of their tours if I can, because I really like the whole kind of style. The fact the company keeps together and they, you know, they work a lot together really comes through in the work for me. And this time they've got Jonathan Miller to direct, which I think is quite a coup. I have to say, I actually thought it was better than the National Theatre production. And I think because it really suited Northern Broadside like a glove, really. They have moved it from Gateshead to Yorkshire, and I think that's more to suit the company than anything else, but it certainly doesn't detract from it. But it certainly gives you, you know, from a company of people who are Yorkshire natives, you know, the fact that they're sort of in genuine accents, I think probably helps. It's a play about, I mean, Rutherford is an early 20th century northern industrialist, but he could be, you know, he could have been a 21st century entrepreneurial press baron. I mean, the reality is he's very larger than life. He's very charismatic. He kind of oozes power. But he's also, you know, a bit of a tyrant, a bit of a misogynist, a bit of a bully. And he's now a widower, and his business is struggling, and his children children of, I mean, in his eyes, his children have let him down. His son John comes back from London with a wife and son, and he doesn't feel he's really worthy of the name. His son Richard is a vicar, which is a disappointment to him. And his daughter Janet has been keeping home, you know, so she hasn't been able to have a career or marry because she's been keeping house for them. And he seems to have more affection for Martin, who's his kind of favourite employee, or he actually at one point calls him a servant. And in the end, you know, as the play kind of unfolds, you know, he puts his business before everything, and by putting it before everything, he actually kind of destroys his family, really. I just think it's just a great piece of writing. Jonathan Miller sort of compared it to Chekhov, but for me it's a whole lot better than Chekhov, because it's much more dramatic and much more relevant. There's a kind of realism and a naturalism to it that kind of transcends time, really. I think the characters are beautifully, beautifully drawn. And, you know, even though it kind of takes place in one room, it kind of shows you a whole world, really, a whole world of this kind of industrialized North, of sort of the self-made man. It's often funny. It's not sort of, you know, deadly serious. And sometimes, you know, when there are lines where you think, well, was that really that old? Because there was a snipe about bankers and how they their attitude to small manufacturing businesses, which I thought was about as bang up to date as you could get, really. The acting is great. Barry Rutter, who is the director of Northern Broadsides, plays Rutherford really, really well. And there are some other great performances. The one I'd single out, I think, was Richard Standing, who's a Northern Broadsides regular, who plays Martin, the servant. But they're all very good. You know, I was thrilled that it got transferred into the St. James's Theatre, so more people get to see it. I think we talked about her other play, The Stepmother, a while back, and this is, you know, another great play. And as you say, it's fascinating when you know that she had to put her initials and not her first name, because she knew that if it was known to be by a woman, it probably wouldn't have been liked. So at least we seem to have moved on in that context, as we're all raving about female playwrights, female directors and female designers in 2013. So a great night and not to be missed for me.
I enjoyed it slightly. There are some changes because they got Blake Morrison to play with the text a little, although I don't think he made any major changes to it. I think they may have lost Wendy Peters from the time we both saw it at the Rose in Kingston. She's not mentioned in the St. James's website, but she was only sort of in a bit part, just coming on and doing a sort of a character part. Yeah. But yeah, as you say, it's a very, very impressive play. I had to see this after I saw The Stepmother, because I was so impressed by that. I want to see this, and this is, yeah, at least as good. I mean, she's a name that you really want to see more of. And I mean, she only wrote about four or five plays, so it's a hopefully some people will take a look at those at some point. One of the things I thought about it was that it did kind of, when you're watching it, you're sort of thinking, oh well, I've seen this before. This is kind of a take on Brighouse's Hobson's Choice, where you get that tough woman, she finds the employee and sort of takes over the company. But it doesn't quite go like that. It's, you know, it's Sowerby's able to sort of bring out sort of a different take on things. And the last scene, the last encounter, is really quite remarkable, and it's almost completely unexpected. You've seen this character not really, you know, being ignored for the first part of the play in many ways, and suddenly coming out really quite strongly and standing up to Rutherford. It was a very impressive piece, I thought. I agree with you also about Northern Broadsides. They are always an impressive company, everything they do. I mean, it's only a pity that they don't tend to get down to London that often. It would always be nice to see them. I also take any chance I can want them to do Sailor Beware, which of course Wendy Peters would be perfect for.
Used to they used Greenwich, but they now seem to have chosen the Rose in Kingston as their sort of southeast location. Really, they've been there a couple of times now, I think. But I did before that see them in Greenwich in a couple of things. One play about Shakespeare, as opposed to being a Shakespeare play, which was paired with a Shakespeare play. I think I can't remember the name of it. No, Sweet William, I think it was.
We're now going to talk about To Kill a Mockingbird, which has just closed at the Open Air Theatre in Regent's Park. It's based on the novel by Harper Lee and has been adapted for the stage by Christopher Sergel. One of the more interesting things about this play is that it features the Hollywood actor Robert Sean Leonard in the cast. What did you think about it, Gareth?
I didn't really know much about Robert Sean Leonard, and my recollection of reading Harper Lee's novel was I couldn't remember much about it, really. So I was going because I do like a nice summer evening, if you get one, in the open-air theatre, and I wanted to see them sort of continue to stretch themselves, because I think for many years the open-air theatre was just synonymous with Shakespeare, and then they started doing a musical every year, and it kind of reinvented itself as a great, great place for musicals. And then in more recent years, Timothy Sheeda, since he's been there, has tried out dramas and comedies, and most notably a wonderful Crucible and a really good Lord of the Flies. So I was really interested to see what is in fact a piece of storytelling and how that would work on the open-air stage. And in fact, it works really, really well. Because the actors actually start reading the novel from the audience. They kind of stand up in the audience. And then they start moving on to the stage. And even though a lot of scenes are staged, there's a kind of reading from the novel almost like as narration in between the scenes. So they're reading from the novel, which is in their hands, all of them, throughout the play. And as they walk on the stage, they kind of chalk the town onto the floor of the stage. All the props are kind of lined up on the sides where the actors wait while the scenes are going on and they're not doing anything. And the only thing that's on stage for the duration really is a tree, which in the first part has a tire for as a kind of swing, and in the second part has a noose for you can imagine what form. And it just really worked as storytelling. I mean, it took a little while to get into the kind of rhythm of it, but it just, as soon as it grabs you, it just doesn't let you go. I really didn't want the interval to come. I would have liked to sort of liked it to keep going, because I was just so into it at that point. You know, it's of course a story of America when, you know, in less liberal times, and there's a black man who's accused of raping a white girl. It's unlikely that he will get justice because, you know, the odds are stacked against him. But Atticus, the part played by Robert Sean Leonard, defends him. And despite a robust defence and very little evidence, he does, of course, get convicted. This kind of you know, horrible racism and dreadful attitudes is kind of juxtaposed with the innocence and charm of the children. Atticus's two children and their friend who comes to visit, and that kind of plays very well, really. I just thought it was really very enthralling, very moving in times, very funny in times. I don't know who the three children were the night I went, but they were just sensational. I mean, really, really good. Robert Sean Leonard had great chemistry with them and lots of presence as Atticus. And there's a couple of other roles that are really well acted. Tom, who's the accused, is acted by Richie Campbell, and he's excellent. And then his alleged victim, Maudie, is acted by Hattie Ledbury. Or Ladbury, I think, actually, who's also hugely impressive. But actually, you know, there's a whole set of very, very good performances, and you've got sort of people like Julie Legrand coming to the open-air theatre. So fortunately, it was a good enough night, just a kind of tantalising little dusting, which didn't come to much. And the spell, you know, again, the sort of magic spell of the open-air theatre worked in another genre, this time in storytelling. So sorry to say it's too late for you to go and see it, but something I enjoyed very much indeed.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.